Good afternoon. It is 1:04, and I'd like to call the February 1st, 2022 special meeting of the Harris County Commissioners Court to order for the purpose of making a budget presentation that addresses the March 1st, 2022 through September 30th, 2022 short fiscal year. No action will be taken by the Harris County Commissioners Court at this meeting. Due to the way the meeting is posted, I know folks have said this, but it's worth repeating. We do need three members present at the dais physically for the length of this meeting. I have to jet at 3 p.m. This was the only time folks could make it at 1, but I have a scheduling conflict that I can't move at 3. So, Commissioner Kegel, if it's still going past that time, I will ask that you help us preside over the meeting. Commissioner Kegel, I believe we have a guest today.
Yes, we have a pastor who is going to lead us in our invocation, who we are very grateful for. They've jumped into on somewhat short notice from our office. But we're also delighted because in our last commissioner's report, we passed a resolution honoring Korean Citizen Day. And our pastor happens to also be of the Korean American community. Pastor, are you there?
I am here. Yes.
Please lead us in our invocation, sir.
Yes, let us all pray. Dear gracious and almighty God, all glory be unto you, the creator, sustainer, and redeemer of all things. We give you thanks for your providence and for your provisions in all of our lives. We give you particular thanks for all those here in this meeting who have the privilege and responsibility to lead and serve the people of Harris County. We ask for your particular faithfulness and things upon them as they serve. Lord, may your ever-loving presence be over and in this meeting as the short fiscal year budget from March 1st to September 30th year is discussed and planned. Would you provide much wisdom and grace for all to do that which is best for the people they serve? Would you provide a spirit of unity and oneness in this meeting? In and through it all, may they do all things trusting that you are faithful and good. May they strive to be a blessing as surely they have been blessed. May you cover any and all shortcomings that any of us might have so that your will is surely done. Thank you, Lord, once again for your love and grace in all of our lives. We pray this in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Pastor, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you, and blessings to you.
We'll recite the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to
Texas,
one state under God, one and indivisible. We have a few speakers, so we'll take the speakers first, and then we'll move on to the budget presentation by Mr. Berry. Tiffany, if you could please call the speakers. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. The first speaker is Christopher Rivera of the Texas Civil Rights Project. Speaking on the budget, you have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. As the speaker mentioned, my name is Christopher Rivera. I live in Precinct 1, and I work for the Texas Civil Rights Project. Since the pandemic began, there has been a decrease in public safety. Community members have struggled with housing instability, loss of employment, and the loss of health care. We need to reimagine what public safety is. The county is investing 60% of the budget to maintain previous notions of public safety, which include mass incarceration, over-policing, and a racially based biased justice system, instead of asking what the root cause of crime is. We need to invest in proactive programs that situates the community's safety at first. When people have access to affordable, permanent housing, they are less likely to be in dire situations that force them into crimes of survival, like theft, robbery, trespassing, loitering, and prostitution. In order to reimagine public safety, Harris County can invest and support programs like the Way Home Continuum of Care, which provides housing for over 20,000 people experience homelessness. The county can fund programs like Emergency Financial Assistance, which is on pace to serve 7,800 households that are in jeopardy of losing basic access to utilities. This is what public safety looks like. Housing, running water, electricity, a warm home for the family to shelter during a global pandemic. Last year, there were 1,454 unsheltered people in Harris County and 1,439 sheltered people, amounting to 2,893 people experiencing homelessness. The homeless rate is 4.8 times the latest homicide rate in Harris County. I recognize those individual homicides as deeply impacting families and the community, but we must note that we have a severe issue of homelessness. Although there were over 600 homicides in 2021 in Harris County is spending 60% of the new budget to reduce violent crime. while the Economic Opportunity and Housing Department is allocated 3% of the budget to address homelessness, which is 4.8 times higher than the homicide rate. When we think public safety, we need to look at the larger issues like housing, universal health care, public education, and debt relief. I plead with the commissioners today to freeze the sheriff's budget, the constable's budget, and the district attorney's budget. We have seen the Justice and Safety Department budget increase 5% annually for the last 5 years, but we are still mired in crime. Let's approach public safety in a new way, a way that addresses the needs of the people, not the very few who benefit from maintaining the status quo. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next is Colleen Bigley. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. I'm first, so I'm not sure if I've picked the right agenda because of what I signed up for. But what I think, I've done the social work for about 8 years down here where I'm a mental health caseworker and counselor. I had to go visit people in the home. And it's no exaggeration that I've seen an accident every day. I've been hit 3 times myself. And I just think there should be more money in the budgeting and the agenda, a lot more money for more speed traps, more monitoring of the roads, the racing, people are texting. It's getting so now it's really not a free country, you know, especially in the city. I've been to other cities. I've worked in other cities, and this is not the worst. But it's increasingly worse in the last 12 years I've been here. So, like, in other words, right here in senior housing, we don't even walk to Walgreens anymore because Kentwood and Gessler, they're flying past here, a terrible accident in front of my apartment. We asked for another speed trap. I don't know the formal name of what that is. They rejected it. I think there needs more of them, more money for police. I think they should get twice as much as they get now, you know. So I think funding should go toward that. It's getting very dangerous in Houston. Houston last year was the most homicides in the car for drunken driving. And there should be more stricter penalties. To even visit someone on 610 and Chimney Rock at night or go home, you can't because they're racing. So I guess I hope this is a correct agenda, but I just think there needs to be much more money in monitoring the roads because I've been out there and it's very, very dangerous. And I'm trying to think, there's one other thing. Like I said, stricter penalties, more police, more, much more money for the traps. Because that will deter people. And there's several areas that need that. I didn't write them here. So it's no exaggeration that I've seen an accident every day. And I can't hear my one ear because someone was dodging racism on me 3 years ago, hit me, and I would have died, but the axle broke. So I have some personal experience. I was hit in the back and someone texting. So those are the things I think you really need to put on your budget for the safety of our children and people in our community.
Thank you so much.
Next is Paul Bruce of the Harris County Deputies Organization speaking on the budget. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
County Judge, Commissioners, I'm a board member with the FOP Harris County Deputies Organization. Today, I speak to you as a matter of grave public interest and concern. We represent the county law enforcement employees throughout the whole entire county, sheriff and constables. Violent crime is at a record level, and according to the latest stats, Houston has now surpassed Chicago and LA to become the murder capital of the United States. This is all under your watch. I'm extremely disappointed in our county leadership. As most of you know or should know, the Sheriff's Office Law Enforcement Command, which is patrol and investigations, has been on a hiring freeze since the beginning of October. We had 92 separations, retirements, and resignations in the month of December alone. We are at a critical staffing levels at the Sheriff's Office and investigations and patrol. The Sheriff's Office is the chief law enforcement office and serves the low-income and minority communities. These communities cannot afford your expensive deputy contract program. The sheriff has requested patrol, jail, and investigation positions, and we expect them to be granted. Since the defund the police movement, law enforcement has had difficulty finding good qualified candidates to fill the empty positions, while at the same time, we are losing droves of officers to early retirements and leaving law enforcement altogether. Our pay is way behind our competitors. An HPD lieutenant makes $40,000 more than an HCSO lieutenant. A regular trooper makes $130,000 a year. I ask the commissioner's court to make our pay competitive so that we can provide good quality law enforcement to the community as they deserve it. Commissioner Garcia, you told us last year that you were working on something and all county employees got a 1.2% pay raise, which didn't even fill our gas tanks. We are disappointed in you, especially given that you were the former sheriff. Law enforcement is different from all other county employees. During the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, we did not get to work from our house. We went into COVID-positive houses and became exposed. And Commissioner's Court, at the same time, took away our hazard pay and our COVID sick leave. We estimate that we are 20 to 25% behind in pay in competitive agencies. Bexar County SO just recently got a 15% pay raise. What are we getting in Harris County? A 5% increase in our insurance and a 7% inflation rate. With a hiring freeze, resignations, retirements, low pay, and record crime levels, I ask this important question to Commissioner's Court. Is this the way that y'all are defunding the police? Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Next is Amy Taylor speaking on the budget. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my name is Amy Taylor. I currently reside in Harris County. I've been a part of the Project Harvey for approximately 3 years, and now I've just received plans and blueprints on a bill that I've already picked out paint colors for my HOA to deny. I want to know who is overseeing how this money is spent, and why wasn't this brought to my attention a year and a half ago when I was picking out stuff. It just seems like the only thing that this money is there is to keep these people employed. They're not doing the application process properly to make sure that we can even put these houses in the neighborhoods. People are staying on their on their list for years at a time, and now I'm at a point where I've been on this program for 3 years, and now my HOA is denied based on the house that they build and all the hundreds and thousands of dollars that have been spent on me. I feel like have all been to waste because of an inappropriate application process that they're not following through with, or I'm not even sure what kind of management has been put in place to make sure that this money is allocated correctly. I mean, it's obvious to me that people aren't getting the quality case management and this money is not being spent properly. I can't understand why that nothing is being done about it, why people aren't their issues aren't being followed through with. I've called several times to try to find out who's over this money. Why aren't they calling people back? Why aren't they working on these cases? I was told a year and a half ago that my HOA would be taken care of for me, and now thousands of dollars later, I have an answer is no, and nobody has any answer for it. Other than we'll see what we can do. But at this point, all this money has been wasted, and it's not just me. It's other people that are being kept on waiting lists for obscene amounts of time to be told no because the proper questions in the application process are not being asked or they're not being followed through with. At this point, I feel like this process has been a waste of money and for a lot of people a waste of time. At this point, my worry about my sheetrock falling on my head in the garage, my roof is leaking, I've had termite damage since Harvey, and I signed a petition not to do anything to my house. So at this point, I'm looking for a reasonable time to, are they going to close my case and deny me with all this money wasted? Where does that go? Who answers for this? That is my time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next is Marissa.
Stephanie, I'm sorry, yes, who just spoke, just to make sure, is it precinct one? Yeah.
Speaker number 5, Amy Taylor.
Got it. Okay, so we'll make sure Commissioner Ellis's office is aware. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next is speaker 6, Marissa Hansen. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Hi. So I was at the crime town hall last week, and I learned some really interesting facts about the county's budget last year and what you guys did. From what I understand, you guys put $97 million towards criminal defendants and then defunded the prosecutor's office. So the prosecutor's office makes $22,000 less than public defenders. It's almost like you're demoralizing our public defender's office, or our prosecutor's office by design, and demoralizing them. You know, the county has already experienced 38 murders just this month. Three cops have been shot. One has been killed. His daughter is having to bury him today. And this is starting to seem like it's more by design to demoralize our cops. You guys have clearly defunded our police covertly. And, you know, the truth about the 2020 election is coming out. We know about Chris Holland. We know that Chris Holland wanted to turn Texas blue. We know about Chris Holland working with the DNC. We know a lot of stuff. There's footage of drop boxes and ballot harvesters. We have a heat map of the fraud which occurred in 2020, predominantly in red areas, but I guess it's easier to commit fraud, election fraud, in red areas as opposed to blue. I want to know why you guys spent nearly $32 million on the election in 2020 when the 2016 election was only $4 million. Has anyone audited that? Because that seems like a very large amount of money just for mail-in ballots. Also, I want to know why you guys accepted CTCL funds back in July of 2021. The pandemic is over. COVID is over, Hidalgo. You call for private meetings for commissioner's court citing COVID, but you go out to the Chevron Marathon and run. You know, people are starting to see through this. We know that you guys are using COVID to move money around. We know that you guys are using COVID to keep our court shut. I mean, the backlog alone in our prisons is just shameful. And I don't know how you guys sleep at night. You know, the Democrats in this commissioner's court, I don't know how you guys sleep at night knowing what you're doing.
Thank you, ma'am. Your time is up.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
The next speaker is speaker number 7, Leticia Ablaza of Air Alliance Houston. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Leticia. I live in Precinct 2 in the East End near Industry, near the Ship Channel, and also work for Air Alliance Houston, which is also part of the Healthy Ports Community Coalition. I am here today to urge members of the court to protect and expand investments in pollution control as you guys start to make budget decisions for the upcoming year. As commissioners, I'm sorry. Investments in pollution control are investments in the public health of our families, our residents, and also the economic attractiveness of our region. For far too long, we've invested in far too little in pollution control. And as a result, our health has suffered. When our health suffers, everything else suffers. And this suffering isn't distributed equally. Last year, a study revealed the differences in life expectancy across our region. And this included pollution exposures. The lack of investments in monitoring, enforcement, and restrictions from the state level contributed greatly to this disparity. There is a very important role that Harris County Pollution Control has played during industrial disasters, when pollution can be at its greatest and our health is being jeopardized. Harris County Pollution Control provides essential emergency fence line monitoring and safety assessments to keep us and the community informed about potential risks to our health. Therefore, investing in Harris County Pollution Control is also an investment in emergency preparedness and disaster recovery and response. I want to commend the Harris County Pollution Control for their investment in fence line air monitoring. This is dire for our local, it is dire for our local elected leaders to protect us from further exposure to toxins that industry is exposing us to and negatively affecting our health. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak today.
And the final speaker for today is Emmanuel Thomas of King Blake Chess Club, and he's speaking on a non-agenda related item. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my name is Emmanuel Thomas, and this is to, Judge Lena Hidalgo. I've been trying to get in contact with Kim Ogg to speak about the judicial misconduct that has gone on with my son's case. You can look it up under hashtag justice, the number 4, King Blake. You'll see my whole story and everything I've done. Mr. Adrian Garcia, I spoke with you during the Vanessa Guillen situation that you called us out to assist on, and you told me that you would help me out with my case with my son after the election. It's been a year later. Brother Rodney Ellis, I've spoken to your office a lot, and I've tried to get you to contact me to help me out with this case. There's been some judicial misconduct in our city, and a lot of people have gone through it, and a lot of people are affected. I'm coming up on the 4th year without my son for his birthday. In 2 days, we'll be at the grave at Houston Memorial Gardens to honor him on that day, and I was hoping someone in this city could help me put my story out there and get us some financial as well as some legal help in this situation, because my family has went through a lot. I've helped out a lot in the city on many different issues, and now I need true help from someone. I've asked many, and I've always gotten the door shut. I need someone to actually do it. If you can reach out to me, my phone number is here. The Cash App is Deepak, T-H-E-P-A-K-K-E. We're trying to put together something to honor my son after this, so much disrespect has been done to him in this city, after I, his father, and his family have done a lot for this city on many different levels. You would be so surprised at the amount of things I've done. For me and my family to get this type of treatment with my son's case is just disrespectful, a slap in the face to the citizens and to all of those that have ever lived in this city that have done right and have helped out the community in the right way. When they need help, the community is supposed to come and help them also. And so now I ask, after speaking 22 times at City of Houston's council meetings and not getting any help, now I come to you guys at the county, because the city told me that my son was murdered in the county area. So now it comes on to y'all. My son was left out uncovered for 5 hours. No one reached out to me. His body was destroyed by the elements out there. Constant pictures barraged over social media of his naked body exposed and officers standing all over him. There's been too much disrespect. And here I have been fighting for 4 years, and you honor people that do stand up for things. And you can see my track record of fighting as a father, as a parent, as a good citizen would do. Now I need y'all to help me and help my family continue this fight, because I'm not giving it up. And I need to speak to Kim Ogg, because there's judicial misconduct in Harris County that I've been getting pushed around and been getting doors closed at me because I'm not someone of importance. If my son's situation was like that, I would have a million people applauding the things that I've done, but it's not. I seem to be a nobody, and I need your help.
Thank you.
Judge, those are all the speakers we were able to reach.
Okay, thank you so much. So now that we've taken all the speakers, thank you to everyone who called in. I'll hand it over to Dave Berry for his presentation.
Thank you, Judge and Commissioners. And could you please pull the short presentation up? Thank you, Judge and Commissioners. And I also want to start by thanking the team at the Office of Management and Budget and all the departments around the county who have worked very hard to get us where we are in the budget process. Given the vast needs that Harris County residents have, and given the fact that we have a tighter belt on revenue than we once had, we've had to reform and improve the way we do budgeting. And While there are obviously many judgment calls involved in proposing a budget, what I can assure you is the team has worked very, very hard to stretch every dollar and reflect your priorities through a rigorous process. Next page, please. I have a very short presentation to leave time for questions and discussion. If any members of the public are watching, the full proposed budget is available on the Budget Department website, as well as extensive backup. We're about 5 months into the budget process at this point. It started with an exercise, which really had never been done before at the county, of writing down and defining all the programs and services the county has, and working through the estimates of how much we spend on them. We went on to work with Commissioner's Court and define some priority outcomes. This is being explicit about what priorities the budget should reflect. Budget should be a reflection of values. Putting together performance data, receiving budget requests, reviewing them, refining them. And then we also went through 4 days of budget hearings where departments directly made their case for what they felt they needed. And all of that is culminated in the proposed budget, which is in front of you. That's not an easy task to put together. It's certainly not a matter of recommending every request with merit behind it. But we have put forward a budget that, at least in our judgment, maximizes return on tax dollars and makes people better off. And we have done this within the constraints of what I believe is a realistic revenue picture. It was the longstanding, if unwritten, policy of Harris County to leave tax rates unchanged, even as we saw a booming economy and significant appreciation in property values. We are now on the third year of consecutive tax rate decreases, which obviously has a benefit from the perspective of the taxpayers, but also has consequences about what we can fund. This budget assumes that we stay at current tax levels on existing property. So existing property would pay the same, taken as a whole, would pay the same taxes, even if there is appreciation. The only new revenue we would get is from new property. And this applies primarily to the long fiscal year budget when we would actually have new tax revenue. Obviously, it's up to this court to set the rate, and it can do so within a range defined by statute. We have made an assumption which we think is defensible, and if you will, straight up the fairway. We didn't assume the highest possible growth. We also didn't assume effectively an arbitrary cut due to some state law formula if we couldn't get a quorum. We've also worked to find ways to pay for new requests. Grants, special revenues, stopping doing something else to do a new priority. It doesn't always show up in every line item of the budget, which focuses mostly on what's new, but I can tell you there are tens of millions of dollars of requests that we've either been able to meet or withdraw or never have to consider in the first place because we found a way to pay for them. Finally, this proposed budget reflects a focus on justice and safety, which we'll talk more about. And of our net new investments, about 70% are in this area. Next page, please. This, at the very highest level, is a review of last year's budget, the short fiscal year budget, and the fiscal year 2023 planning budget. Online and in materials that have been provided to court, you can see all the detail at the department and agency level, and even down to the program and service level. But these are investments aligned to the goal areas of Commissioner's Court. So it's the highest possible level view of where our money is going. Next page, please. And here's a look at our net new investments. So this is, to have comparable periods, the full fiscal year 23 planning budget versus last year's adopted budget. So we're comparing 12 months to 12 months. You see again, a focus over 70% on justice and safety. And a number of investments, I would call it an all of the above approach to addressing violent crime. So we see investments in the jail, in health and safety in the jail, investments in the sheriff's patrol division and constables, including over 30 new deputies, over 35 investigators focused on the most violent crimes, as well as investments to make sure that our system is addressing the right people and focusing our resources on violent offenders and where the biggest problems occur. Two other points I'll mention around law enforcement. We have proposed a $3 million fuel stabilization fund to help with increased maintenance and gas and patrol vehicles. Sounds like a little thing, but it's actually been a real issue to work through this year, as well as an order of approximately 400 patrol vehicles to get us caught up to where we need to be in terms of our fleet. I will say that though this is the picture of the general fund, due to federal grant dollars, both through the American Rescue Act and CDBG money, we are making significant investments in health and housing as well. And in the general fund, part of what we've done is be sure to support those efforts so that we can put those grant dollars to maximum use. Next page, please. Here's a picture of recommended budget requests by priority outcome. The way the budget process worked this year, we asked departments to line up their requests against priority outcomes and make the case that the investment would actually make people better off. Again, you see a focus on reducing violent crime, but also on other justice and safety goals, and also a focus on providing outstanding customer service to our residents who interact with county government to do things like pay their taxes, get a passport, check out a book for the library. This is the final page, please. I think we've been over the focus on justice and safety and some of the investments there. The area of governance and customer service, a number of initiatives. We're continuing to implement a 311 system. And I do want to address salary and benefits for county employees, because this was both one of the biggest challenges in preparing this budget and an area that I think is vitally important. What we have proposed in this budget is a 2% across the board increase for employees, 1% coming in the short fiscal year, 1% coming in fiscal year 2023. We've also seen an increase in benefits for employees, the cost of the county of 6.7%. And that includes both maintaining our health program and fully funding our pension at existing levels. So if you look at all of that together, it's a 3.5% increase in salary and benefits for employees. The reality of this is, due to benefits increases, we had less money overall to allocate to salary increases. And this is an area where, candidly, I would like to have done more, but we felt fiscal constraints to both do the service investments we needed to and take care of our employees. In health, housing, and opportunity, while we didn't fund all of the requests or recommend all of the requests, this budget contains robust support for the MWBE program and the Department of Economic Equity and Opportunity. Also a significant expansion of our Veterans Services Department, both to establish a small business program there, and also to facilitate veterans accessing the services they need from other agencies. Finally, in the area of flooding and transportation, a couple of highlights. Our flood control district will continue its asset management program and addressing deferred maintenance that has lingered for too long in this county. We continue the precinct-based mobility program with a 2% increase and continued funding for the Vision Zero program with the aspiration of reducing and eliminating traffic fatalities. So I'll conclude by saying, in putting this proposal in front of you, we certainly had to make a lot of judgment calls. What I can assure you is there has been a robust and rigorous process that treats with care both your priorities and taxpayer dollars. And I think we have stretched our funds a long way. So we certainly appreciate your consideration and happy to take any questions invite any discussion.
Commissioner Garcia and then Commissioner Ellis.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Mr. Berry. What is the current estimated revenue? Approximately, of course.
Tax revenue,
first, if I might. Sure. M&O's revenue, which is not fiscal year.
Dave, is your mic on? Sorry about that. So we are estimating in fiscal year 23, $1.726 billion. Of M&O tax revenue. That's based on the assumptions I described previously. And that's actually tax year 22, calendar year 22, which is the main driver of the fiscal year 23 budget.
And for the 12 month, is that part of the 12 month estimate as well?
It is not. And that's part of the reason for the tight budget in the short fiscal year is, with no tax rate to back new investments, we've been hesitant to recommend them. So that's essentially based on the current level of tax revenue.
Got you. And then based on all the requests that you have received from all the departments, what is the ask of all county departments in comparison, just as a number, if you've got the total number of what's being asked so that we can see the comparison between revenue and a potential expenditure?
Well, it was well over $200 million in excess of the resources we had.
So about a billion nine, rather.
If you're looking at the taxes piece, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you mentioned 30 new deputy constables that were funded.
That was both the majority in the sheriff's office, but some in the constable's office. So that was between the sheriff's and the constable's office.
Gotcha. And out of the deputy constables that were funded, which precincts did they go to?
They were all around the contract patrol program. So the county.
So these were the absorbed positions?
Yes, it was the county's 30% share.
Oh, okay.
Of contract patrol positions. And I'll confirm the precinct for you if you give me one moment. They were in the new contract in precinct 4. It's possible we'll see a couple more trickle in between now and the final budget.
Gotcha. And then lastly, just to make sure I heard you right, you're proposing a 2% increase within both fiscal years, 1% in the 23 and 1% in the 24.
That's correct. 2% on salary, 3.5% on overall salary.
Gotcha. And then based on what the deputy from the FOP mentioned, that what is the rate of inflation at point?
There's obviously different measures of it. I think you could say somewhere in the range of 5 to 7% year over year.
So he's not off the mark when he quoted a 7% inflation rate.
No, I think unfortunately we're in a situation where county employees aren't getting salary and benefit increases that keep up with inflation.
Right. And then are we increasing benefits for retirees as well?
The short answer is no, we're not increasing the benefits. We are making the contributions that keep their benefits where they are, despite a decline in the return assumption. So not getting more money, but as interest and assumed returns go down, the county has to put more in to keep us in solid financial shape.
Gotcha. Okay. And then the last pay increase that our employees got was what fiscal year? What calendar year was that?
Well, in the prior fiscal year, which started, well, it's actually the current fiscal year, mm-hmm. March 1st of last year, there was an across-the-board 1.3% increase. Again, some employees got more as department budgets allowed within the approved pay bands, but that was the minimum.
And that was in part to because there was an increase in insurance cost, correct?
Primarily this year. Yeah. We saw an increase in health costs. So we didn't see a significant one last year.
And so that was an effort to try to, you know, pay for that effectively.
The 1.3% last year was actually based on inflation. Right. And so, you know, we were in a more fortunate moment then in terms of inflation where, you know, the county could afford within its revenue to match that inflation. That's a real challenge now, as we just talked about.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Commissioner Ellis.
Thank you. Judge, thank you, Mr. Bear. I think that you and your team did a good job under difficult circumstances. I think you're right. Our budget does reflect our values more than anything else we do, certainly more than our tweets or our op-eds or our sound bites. Where we spend the money does reflect our values.
Commissioner? I'm sorry to interrupt, but Universal Services needs y'all to take a break for a few minutes. The live stream just went down, so they need to get it back up.
5 minutes, okay, you guys?
How much time do they need? I wouldn't mind having my lunch.
I got to lose weight. Three.
You want me to lose some weight? I know it.
Yeah.
I can't stay here.
I think probably about 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay, we'll regroup at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 1:46. We're taking a break till 2 o'clock. It is 2:02, and Commissioner Scott is back in session. Commissioner Ellis.
Judge, I was trying to make the point that the budget is a reflection of our values, and I think that Dave Barry, who's probably rushing back in, his team did a good job of managing the resources that we have, but you know, I think about being five of us, it's kind of like a household with five people. And, you know, some of them got to be the adults, obviously. Or you could let the three kids, somebody say they want a new pool, the other one wants a new TV, the other one wants something else, but you got to decide what you cut. And I think that's part of what decision will have to be made by us if we want to make a lot of changes. In Austin, it generally worked that way. Because everybody has a wonderful idea, but usually they'll just come out of one up, and then you figure out how to balance it later.
Commissioner, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was asked to announce that if folks listening online, they may need to refresh their browser to get their stream back. So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Refresh your browser. You want to catch this? I want to walk through the decision we made, the choice that we made to cut taxes 3 years in a row. Unlike the previous decade, or I think the previous 11 years, and the previous, was it 11 or 12 years that they left the tax rate where it was, which meant additional revenues? Was it 10, 11, or 12? You know, Ms. Berry?
I know over a decade. I don't know 11 or 12.
So on my notes, it's 11, Commissioner. Maybe it is 12. And we went through this last quarter a little bit. I think these numbers are right. My staff ran them. I don't know if they ran them by you. It would mean that if we would have almost $500 million more in total revenue over the last three budget cycles, if we had simply done what the court did at least a decade before. Is that accurate?
That sounds right. The cumulative impact. Yes.
And for this year alone, according to my calculation, we would have an additional $250 million more across all taxing districts. For the county budget alone, we would have $216 million more to work with than we have this go around.
That sounds right.
Okay. I want to stress that because at the end of the day, you know, with whatever we decide, I'm going to tweet it out like everybody else. But we made that decision in the last three tax cycles. And I'm sure on each person's social media, they'll claim it was their idea. But they probably won't point out what we didn't do as a result of doing that. And Mr. Bear, you made the comment earlier that by cutting the rate, households in Harris County benefited, but it was going to be a problem for the issues that we fund. I just rephrase that a little bit because I hope that the things that we make a decision to fund matter to those households as well, whether it's law enforcement, pollution issues, housing, whatever it is, because we part of that household too. You put in this budget, I think it was $10 million set aside in 22 and $20 million in 23, since we're doing the shorter cycle and the longer cycle. I want to get some sense of what you anticipate needing that for. You know, I remember when I was on city council and somebody came in there with something unallocated, and I came up with something. I split it up between the 9 council districts. By the way, it was in the community development budget, so that never came back again. But I just want to ask, what do you anticipate using that for?
Well, I guess part of the honest answer is we don't know, and that's part of the reason it's set aside for unbudgeted items. But I think this last year is actually a good example of what happened. We set aside 1% of our revenue in this fiscal year, and the biggest uses of that has been pretrial services and pretrial supervision, because we've had a very large population. And as our new pretrial director has discussed, you know, very expensive monitoring ordered by the courts, over which the county has no control. And also the jail, which we've seen a very high population, high rates of overtime. We, in the end of last year, actually, there was a $29 million transfer to the sheriff's office. Now, some of that was general fund, some of it was CARES dollars. But that, you know, that's the kind of unexpected cost over which we don't have control that I think it's wise to keep something in reserve. And if I might just real quick, I mean, my policy on this has been to budget to what we actually think the revenue will be, right? I mean, I know in the past, sometimes the budget office was very conservative about what they budget and effectively was setting aside money that way. And my approach has been, let's project what we think the revenue is and, you know, be explicit. If we're setting aside for something unexpected, let's put the number out there and be clear about it so we can track against it.
Now, what happens if we use that money and so we don't have that reserve?
There's not a good answer. I mean, particularly when we talk about adding staff or things we may need to do, you start getting upside down of your revenue versus your expenses, which is not a place I would recommend we go.
I just want to go through our options so we know where we are before we get to the entertainment. What's in the pick?
So if you look at the response and recovery fund and the pick together, which are both available for COVID or other natural disasters, we're projecting starting next year with a little under $100 million, around $90 million.
And what happens if we can always go back and rate the pick? What happens if we rate it and we end up with a crisis?
Well, I think from my perspective, there are appropriate uses for it, which is if we have a natural disaster and we need to respond, that's what it's there for. But I wouldn't want to use it to plug operating needs, because if we do that, it won't be there when we have another hurricane and we need $100 million lickety-split.
Just a few more on this line. What if we, some governmental entities that I'm looking at around the country, are using the federal money to fund ongoing expenses, and they'll just cross that bridge when it's time to make those cuts. That's an option as well. I'm just trying to lay out all the options I can think of with my limited ability. But so what's the downside of that?
Well, it certainly is not one I'd recommend. The downside of that is we wind up upside down with a structural deficit, is the jargon term, expenses more than revenue. And you can kick the can down the road so long, but eventually you have to cut people's benefits or let employees go or cut very, very valuable services. It's just a matter of timing.
And again, I'm just trying to lay out the options as I see them. And if there's some others I haven't thought about giving to it. Only other one I can think about, I guess I've gone through, you can take the reserve, that $20 million, and not cut something else when you take it. You can raid the PIC. You can use federal money and hope you just kick that can a little bit and you figure out something when you get to it. I do want to ask, under the statute that's in place, under state law, how much higher could we raise the tax rate? If anybody's quoting me, I'm not saying, I'm not advocating that. I'm going through the options. And if anybody's brain is so limited, you're not even supposed to raise options. I probably wouldn't waste a lot of time talking to that person anyway. But what could we do under the statute? Before it triggers going to the vote.
So I described the assumption that is in the budget, which is basically keeping revenue flat on existing property, right? As a sort of middle of the fairway assumption, given what I hear from this court on taxes. We could, under the statute, according to our projections, raise almost $50 million in additional revenue without having to have a referendum. Which, I mean, obviously, there are a lot more requests that could be covered if that were the assumption. We didn't want to put an assumption in here that we thought was unrealistic, because then, honestly, the budget doesn't mean much.
Only one other option I want to walk through, and I mentioned this to you one day, our budget is a little different from what the way the state does it. But I can recall on the state level, sometimes you'd have the issue of the comptroller would be a bit creative with the revenue estimate. It would certainly go up when the legislature got out of town. And it was an age-old battle when I was there trying to figure out what can you do, because the comptroller had to give you a number certified. So at one point, the legislature came up with this idea that they would earmark certain things they would do if they had the revenue. And when they had a little list, and put one in there that the comptroller wanted, assuming that might help get that revenue estimate up a little bit. Could we do a budget with, shall we say, a wish list of priorities from the five of us in this household at this table, five family members, saying, wait, if certain things are done, you could fund these things, and we have a list there. I'm just trying to figure out, I'm just trying to lay out the options. All of us, by the way.
Certainly. I mean, looking forward to the fiscal year 23, it'll be driven by the tax rate set this September. We could have a list of investments that could be made if revenue were set above where this budget is. You know, that's not a problem. What I don't want to do is go through a whole new budget process, having just completed one. I think that would not be a good use of time. But option one, option two is simple enough.
And then the last thing I can think of is, you know, if something is important enough, at some point, the adults in the household have to say, but this is what you want. You got to go and ask the people, do they want to pay for it? That happens periodically. Happened with the Harvey Bond issue. You know, it's never an easy thing to do. If it fails, you consider it personal failure. You got me? But you give them the option. At the end of the day, it is their money. Thank you.
Commissioner Ramsey.
Yeah, when I looked at, and I've had some discussions with Mr. Berry on the budget and other issues, and I'll start with revenues. Want to remind the court, I always like to put things in real numbers. Revenues have increased 60% since 2012. Well, that's one point to be made. When we talk about the tax rate last year and where it ended up to be, is if I remember, we maxed out on flood control, and then we did increase the tax rate because we were set really, what, four tax rates? So the one we cut happened to be the hospital district. And what I understand, we got $1 billion in reserve there. Plus, they exceeded their expenses, $291 million. So when you look at that, you say $17 million out of that, plus – we didn't even talk about the COVID and CARES Act money and other things that that we have there. We're spending, we're working, we're going through certain programs. So that's just another adult perspective of the budget. But I also agree the budget reflects our priorities. We got three priorities in Harris County. Real easy. Crime, crime, and crime. And a very realistic, a very straightforward approach to that is to fund what law enforcement has asked for. Don't go, they probably need more than what they even asked for. What the DA asked for, 82 positions. What the sheriff has asked for, I think over 1,000. What the constables have asked for, very minimal. So when you look at law enforcement and what they've asked for, knowing we're in the middle of the worst crime I think this county has ever seen, that would be the appropriate thing. You know, talk's cheap. And I'm going to bring it up. We go to funerals and you have all these conversations. And we buried an officer today. And for us to say, well, boy, we got to do better. Well, doing better is listening to our law enforcement people like the DA, like the sheriff, like the constables. When they say we need this to deal with a crime, I'm no expert. And I'll tell you something else I'm tired of. It's experimenting. We need to listen to our law enforcement people, the DA, the sheriff, the constables. They know what they need, and we need to fund it. So those are our top three priorities. But you know what our fourth priority is? Spending. And my company and thousands of other companies in America, when you get in the bind, first thing we do is cut. We get in the room. We have the adult conversation. That's an adult conversation. Spending's easy. Cutting's hard. And so we'd get the adults in the room and we'd have that conversation about what we need to cut. And I've got $110 million and I'm just getting started. So Mr. Berry and I've had these discussions, but there's things that we can, in light of where we are. We're in a crime-demic, and we need to act like it, and we need to fund it accordingly. So I am, for one, will vote for a budget that funds every law enforcement agency to the level they've asked for. So that's where I'm started. I've communicated details to Mr. Berry, and we'll continue to have those conversations on what could be cut. But in terms of what we look at with this budget and how we look at this short year, how we anticipate what our revenues are and going forward, I think it's important that we do know that we've cut and eliminated as much expense as we can, and I don't think we have.
Commissioner Garcia.
Thank you, Judge. Mr. Berry, what is the number for all law enforcement requests?
Let me get the exact number for you, but it's
approximately.
I would ballpark $200 million of new requests on top of salary and benefits increases that have been provided for.
On top of, okay, plus salary and benefits. And so obviously we're projecting $26 million over current baseline budgets as a part of discussion, correct? So if we wanted to follow Mr. Ramsey's point about cutting, we'd have to go find, in order to fund every request that's being made to us, we would need to go find $180 million to try to shore up the request that's proposed.
It's certainly a decent approximation. Yeah. It wouldn't be a minor cut here or there, even eliminating a department. It would be a real rethink, yeah, of all the other services the county provided. I mean, I would point out, and Commissioner's Court can set priorities wherever it wants, but we're already spending 60% of our budget on justice and safety. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's only the remaining 40% that we could look at to transfer more funds to justice and safety, even given the very high priority it has.
And of the departments that are over $100 million, just to use a number, I mean, because if you're going to be able to find, if you're going to be able to try and find some money, you'd have to look at some of the biggest cost sectors. What departments are we talking about?
I'll use the $100 million loosely, if I may, but those with really large budgets, general fund budgets relative to the others, public health, engineering, those are the biggest ones. Community services is a big department, but it's actually only a small percentage funded by the general fund. Most of it's grant dollars.
So out of our departments, there's only really two that are over the $100 million mark where you could potentially find some potential fat.
Look, I want to be clear. We're looking for fat all the time. And as I mentioned, there are a lot of requests we're able to absorb. We post some small reductions. But yeah, if you want to talk, you know, fundamentally reshaping how much money goes to justice and safety versus other areas. The other department of size I should have mentioned is universal services. So fleet, IT.
List numeric password.
And then try to
this meeting is being
manage
recorded.
It at the table.
Judge, I have one. Mr. Berry, I'm not sure. Liz,
we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, I guess Jay's jumping on because he's saying we can't.
Could we give them until 2:30, Tiffany, to fix it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we'll regroup at 2:30 then. Thank you.
Thanks. And then somebody sent
this
out
meeting
a
being recorded.
A response to it. Or don't send out a motion and say we vote for it. So if you send out a motion and don't discuss Jack, would be the best way.
Not even a motion, just an idea, right?
For example, Commissioner, at almost every meeting, there members of the court will send out proposed motion for a particular item.
Okay.